Hi, my name is Phil Metzger, and in 1992, I moved to Moscow, Russia. From there, I lived in the beautiful Central European country of Hungary, where my family and I spent the next 20 years living, learning, and sharing about Jesus. Different foods, culture, and language, but underneath it all, we discovered the most amazing people. We learned that to share the gospel effectively, we had to adjust. We had to cross cultures. Now we're back in the U.S., and we're discovering that this country is a melting pot of culture. This show is committed to helping Christians connect to those who think, believe, and live differently than them. This is Crossing Cultures. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the very first episode in Season 2 of Crossing Cultures podcast. And I'm so glad that you're back with us, and this conversation today is just going to be so fundamental to every other episode that we're going to have. I'm going to be having a conversation with Dr. Brian Howell. He is a professor of cultural anthropology at Wheaton College in Chicago, Illinois. A really great guy, and I know that this is going to be super beneficial to you. I also want to recommend an episode that we did from last season called I'm Not Weird, You're Weird, and it's on the topic of ethnocentrism. Really recommend it. It'll help frame a lot of the conversation that we're having right now. So I'm glad that you're with us, and let's jump right into this conversation. All right, Brian, thank you so much for being on Crossing Cultures podcast.
And
yeah, so wait, let's find out a little bit about yourself and where you are and, you know, kind of a little bit about your life.
Yeah, sure. I teach at Wheaton College. I've been here since 2001, so 20 years is this year. But before this, I was at Washington University, where I was doing my field work, or I was doing my doctoral work and field work in the Philippines, where we lived for about 2 years while I was studying Protestant churches in the northern Philippines and kind of understanding global local dynamics of churches there. I grew up out in Washington State in a small kind of farming community. And I think that that had something to do with my interest in travel and understanding diversity, because I didn't have a lot of it around me, or it was always kind of at a distance when I was growing up. I mean, there were communities of Latinos, but it tended to be really divided by class. And there were a few students of color in my high school, but there was a lot of pressure on them to really conform to the majority. And so I went away to college, went away to Connecticut to go to school. And that was part of my first big step. And then, just got really interested in the world and kind of what was going on out there. And kind of that became my career.
Wow. And so married kids?
Yeah. Three kids. The youngest is a senior in high school. So he's doing the COVID high school year, looking at going into music. I have a son who's 20 and he's in college at North Park University here in Chicago. And then a daughter who graduated and lives out in Seattle and works for the state government out there. So she's in the midst of politics and having a very interesting experience.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So what I'm hearing though is it's kind of an interesting journey that took you to becoming a cultural anthropologist and a professor of these things. I don't think of like Eastern Washington as like the launching ground for, you know, people into this realm, but it was just being around different cultures that impacted you, or the lack thereof, or was it your time in college?
Yeah, I would say it was the sort of small town in that sense of like, the world is bigger than this and I really want to understand more of it, that sort of got me interested in this in college. But in college, I actually never studied anthropology itself. I studied kind of all around it. It was history and economics and social theory that were the sort of mainstays of my discipline. And what I realized is that was a great preparation for anthropology, because anthro brings in all of these different areas of life. I mean, that's the hallmark of our discipline, is that it's holistic. We're trying to kind of hold all these parts of life together. And I actually found the discipline when I had to do a senior honors thesis, and at the college I was at, the only place missions came up was as part of the white male hegemonic colonial oppression of, you know, local peoples and the destruction of cultures. And I thought there's got to be more to it than that. You know, I think there's more to the story there. And I did have one professor, a historian, who was a Christian, and he helped me to kind of form this project. But I really wanted to see it firsthand. I wanted to understand this not just through archives or through a kind of secondary source, but but to see it. And the only missionary I knew was this guy living in the Philippines. So I called him up and got the time zone all wrong and woke him up in the middle of the night and said, hey, can I come visit you? And he said, sure. And so off I went for kind of 8 weeks of just total bumbling. But it really was ethnographic field work that I was doing without knowing what I was doing. Hmm. And I just found that was the magic. I mean, that was just being able to talk to people and hear them talk about their own lives, their own experiences, mm-hmm. learning from people, not just about people, I think was really what inspired me, that this was the discipline that would allow me to bring together all these aspects of human life in a way that it seemed like other social sciences always wanted me to leave something out. So this
allowed you to bring it all together.
Yeah, to have that holistic perspective.
And because I was, you know, and I should probably tell everybody too that's listening or watching is like I came after finding you because for my doctoral work, I had to read your book, Introduction to Cultural Anthropology. And it's just fantastic. It's a great book. It's an inspiring book. It's one of those books where it's like, gosh, I wish I would have had to read that before I spent 20 plus years on the mission field. It would have been a great resource from the get-go. And I definitely want to see it included into the church network I'm a part of. I want to see us include that into just kind of reading before people go out. It's a great work, but it also, not just because it was a good book, but it inspired me to say, gosh, here's somebody and here's a group of people that are doing cultural work in North America, in the United States. Like you're helping people see that there are culture issues that exist here. And so maybe we could just walk through a little bit, like the book, and you're a cultural anthropologist. Could you break that down? What does that even mean?
Yeah. So the definition that we give in the book, runs along the lines of something like, looking at the diversity of culture worldwide and comparing sort of cultural forms that exist in humanity. But I realized that I think I might actually tweak that a little bit or mm-hmm. The only problem with that definition is it kind of sounds like all we do is describe differences. But in fact, I think, maybe a better definition is something like the understanding and analysis of culture and society as common human phenomena. Mm. You know, like understanding how we as humans always live in cultural and social worlds and that we create these mm-hmm. wherever we are. So anthropology really helps us understand ourselves by understanding others,
right.
there's this analytical component to it, almost a philosophical component. I feel like anthropology is constantly asking the big questions about what does it mean to be a person? What does it mean to have a mind? What does it mean to have a relationship, to love someone? That these kind of big questions are really always at the heart of anthropology.
What I found fascinating in just even the way you described it now and how you guys described it in the book is that we're talking about like a field, anthropology that for many Christians seems like it's like in opposition to the Christian faith. It's kind of got that vibe, for a lot of people, where the way you guys described it and the way that you described, the integration of your Christian faith into the study, it was so holistic. It was so much more. It was even a healthier approach than even just the secular version of anthropology.
Yeah, I can't imagine teaching anthropology at a secular institution anymore. I did that a little bit early in my career, and you have to leave out what is really most important, which is this spiritual and theological dimension. But as Christians, we get to bring that in along with all of the other stuff.
That's so great. And so here's the million-dollar question. What is culture? They're setting you up with one of the hard, because it is, and the reason I want to have that conversation is because, we are, there's those who want to say, and there's even famous works on this, Christ against culture, Christ in culture, Christ above culture. And I know you guys talk quite a bit about that, but there is this tension that exists for many Christians today of, the culture is our enemy and we need to stand against the culture. And I think we'd probably both agree that we understand what they're trying to say there, but it might be a little bit misguided. And in the end, I believe it's kind of an unhelpful approach because it's missing some key elements. So how would you define, you know, here you are, you're the expert, right? Putting you on the spot there, but how would you define culture for somebody who is confused about what it even means?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I would say is, of course, it's a concept. It's not a thing, right? That we're using this word to define something that we see or describe something that we see and experience in human life, which are these patterns, these connections, these ways in which some people are like some people and different from other people. And so we use this term to try to describe it. And it's not a thing that can just be nailed down. We're constantly working with which part of this are we trying to understand? And then we use this word to try to capture that. This word, of course, also has a history. It's developed over time. So anthropology was certainly one of the disciplines that started to really use it in any sort of modern, so any sense that we would recognize it today. But in our early years, we weren't using it the same way as we use it now. But I often tell my students that there's kind of two phases to how anthropologists have defined culture. And the first phase was just figuring out that culture is this whole area of life, that it's not something that some people have a lot of or some people have a little of, or that there's a high version of or a low version of. It's something everybody has. Everybody has the same amount.
Right.
And it encompasses everything that we are and do. It's our language, it's our preferences in art, and it's the ways we organize our families. I mean, these are all aspects of culture. So it's integrated, right? But as anthropology, you know, kept looking at culture, and as the world changed and people moved more and people contacted each other more, and there were fewer of these kind of isolated groups, we realized, oh, it's not a bounded thing. It's not that there are these hard edges to one discrete culture and, oh, here's another culture, and that you can just sort of fit everything inside there, that there are these fuzzy boundaries and people move back and forth. So we looked at, yes, it's integrated. Yes, it's holistic, but it's also permeable, and it's penetrated by power relationships and by interests, and it changes, it adapts. So we had to start paying attention to all the ways in which it moves. So these days, I kind of tell my students, culture is less of a noun and more of a verb. It's more of a thing that we do rather than a thing that we have. But it's a powerful thing. It's we can't do much without culture. Human beings aren't animals that have these instincts. We can't just put a baby on the ground and be like, go off and find some food. You know, they would just shrivel up, right? Because they can't do anything until they get this cultural training, this social training, where they can then begin to figure out, oh, I am a person in relation to these other people. And this is how I do all the things that I need to do to stay alive. And these people help me, you know?
Exactly.
And that's culture, right? And that's something we're doing throughout our entire lives. And we are constantly either reinforcing, which is a big part of what we do with culture, we reproduce it, but we're also challenging it and changing it and innovating it and rejecting it. And so this is where, you know, Christians who say, you know, we have to stand against culture, they're identifying some very specific, very particular practices or ideas that they see around them. And they're saying, okay, we want to reject or transform or do something to those. But what they often miss is that they're not stepping out of culture. They're not uncultural when they do that. They're just picking certain pieces of it and they're focusing on those. And that can be good, but it is dangerous if you're not realizing, oh yeah, but I'm also thinking about these things from a very specific cultural place.
Yeah, because we can never be outside of culture. So wherever we are, we're still in culture. And then we're coming from our particular angle at another issue and saying, I don't like that one, or it's unbiblical, or whatever it might be. But I do think that that's been a part of the problem that I've seen coming back into America, is that we kind of see ourselves as acultural, in a sense, as Christians, where, oh, I don't, you know, I'm kind of above those things. But I think we also forget, and you talk about this, or you wrote about this, I'm sure you talk about it a lot too, is the whole context of the Bible, the whole context of the gospel is God coming into culture. I mean, the fact that he spoke words, he used our language, he created an environment where we could live and thrive and These are all cultural identities. And so would you talk about that a little bit, about how just from a biblical perspective, that God intervening into culture is, you know, even Jesus himself was not acultural. He did not stand outside of culture. He very much was a part of that.
Yeah, I love the way that Andrew Walls, you know, missiologist and historian and really kind of anthropologist, I'm going to claim him as one of us.
Yeah,
he uses this metaphor of translation to talk about incarnation. And anybody who's ever done any sort of translation work knows that you don't go sort of just automatically from one text to another, or from one language to another. And we hear this in church all the time. You know, a pastor will say, this word in Greek has all of these implications. We translate it into English like this, but if we, you know, we should think about these other aspects. Right, that there's no like one-to-one thing where this word means this other word in another language. There's always nuance, right? And his point, Wall's point about the incarnation, is that clearly when God became a human being in Jesus, there were things that were particular in that moment that he had to sort of choose, here's how I'm going to manifest myself. And it had everything to do with the family that Jesus was in, and the specific language that he spoke, and the friends that he had, and all of the things of culture had to be part of it. And the lesson for us is not that, you know, we should be living like Jesus did 2,000 years ago, or that we need to all learn Aramaic, but rather that particularity is not the enemy of the gospel. That being a specific kind of person doesn't make it impossible to love God. In fact, it's the only way to love God, is to be a specific kind of person. But that doesn't encompass all of it. It doesn't wrap around every single possibility in terms of loving God. That in fact, we take our particularity and we apply that particularity to loving God. And this, of course, is Paul's, you know, I mean, dare I say, obsession in his letters, right? Is like, hey, Corinthians, here's here's your world. Here's how you need to love God. Hey, Ephesians, here's what you're dealing with. You know, hey, people in Crete, you know, wrestle with these things. And so there are differences between things that he tells different groups of people because they're living in different places.
Exactly.
And you can only imagine if he had to do that across 1,000 years, how different it would all get. But it's translating. It's translating this message, if you will, into all of these languages, all these cultural contexts in which it can thrive.
I love that it was Walls that spoke about the mission of God as the anthropology of hope. And, you know, that like it's like it was the study of man, but it's within the context of the hope of God. That's a brilliant understanding of the gospel. You know, God becoming one of us for all of us, but all of us within our own context and within our own culture. It's powerful. And do you think that like, I know the answer, but it'd be good to talk about this. Like we tend to get a myopic view of culture and our Christian faith when here's what I'm trying to say. The kingdom of God, there's culture in the kingdom of God. There's language, there's identity, there's purpose, there's value, there's, you know, the exchanging of information and so on. And we tend to kind of think that once I give my life to Christ, I remove myself from the world, but I think we assume that means we remove ourselves from the culture that exists, but there's always culture. We're always existing within that. And I see this kind of a problem for many believers today where we're looking forward to this kingdom as if it's like outside of culture. When it's just a perfect environment, a perfect context, a perfect culture Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. We kind of ran into this a little bit. So I teach at a liberal arts college where we ask students to study everything from, you know, literature to science to political science to communication theory, whatever, all this stuff, right? And sometimes when people talk about the liberal arts, they sort of focus on the humanities because it's like, oh, in heaven we'll have poetry and we'll have music and there's harps and so, you know, Beethoven. And then they focus on the science because they say there will be a new earth and we'll have, you know, perfect biology and perfect, you know, whatever, chemistry and we're studying God's good creation and how it's, and they kind of leave the social sciences out because they think that, oh, social sciences is just studying all the problems in the world right now.
Right.
And once we get to heaven, we won't have any problems. So, you know, who needs economics? Because everybody's just going to share everything. Or, you know, who needs political science? Because everybody's just going to get along. But I think, you know, you look at the image of heaven that we get from the book of Revelation, and it says every tribe, language, tongue, and people before the throne. We do not obliterate cultural distinctions and cultural expressions when we get to heaven. That in fact, we maintain those things in some kind of perfect form. I don't know what a perfect, you know, none of us do, but I like to tell my students that, you know, studying anthropology is just getting ready for heaven because we're gonna need to understand one another. We're gonna need to be able to think well about who we are as cultural beings, and it's gonna be perfect, but it's not going to go away.
And so, I mean, I want to hit on that because I think it's just so powerful. It's like, it's so then in heaven, it's not only that somehow we are a perfect representation of culture on one hand, on the other hand, we're also somehow made a perfect, we have this perfect ability to receive other people's cultural expressions, right? It's kind of on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, clearly we see in the world today that there's a lot of division around these differences, right? We put them into hierarchies, we marginalize them, we characterize them, we stereotype them. I mean, there's just lots of ways in which these human differences have made life hard for us. But that's our fallenness, right? That's not a feature of difference itself. Mm. And what I imagine is that in a redeemed world, in this perfect world, we just are sort of endlessly curious. We are open. We are excited to learn from and with one another, and that we see our complementarity in just a kind of beautifully perfect and all of it under the lordship of Christ. And there's no tension or fear or anxiety around those differences anymore.
No more insecurity, no more, yeah, all that's gone, wow.
And of course, this is exactly what I'm hoping for students who study anthropology, is that we just lessen a little bit some of the anxiety that we have around difference so that we can become more curious and we can become more open and actually be able to kind of welcome this kind of difference as a way of understanding ourselves, but also understanding God's creativity.
So let me ask you then, right there on that point, Brian, how would you speak to people today? You know, because obviously we think of like the study of man and the social sciences as a overseas thing, like, right, we go to a society, a culture, we go to a tribe, we learn a new language, you know. As I was telling you earlier, it's like, I went to Eastern Europe, I went to Hungary, right? I'm going to learn the language, I'm going to learn the culture. I'm going to let God shed me of my own cultural bias as an American. It's neither good nor bad. It's not the point. If I want to connect to people in a different culture, then I'm going to have to be willing to give up those things. But here we are now. We're talking, both of us, in America. And my heart is to help Americans as well, and I guess people all over the world, within their own country, there is no one culture. There is no culture that defines America, one singularity. It is a multicultural, multi-ethnic society. How would you help someone because you used a phrase that I would say would get you into trouble depending on who you said it to, right? And it's the phrase to be open. Oh, if you're going to be open, then you're compromising or you're liberal or progressive or all these terms that are thrown around. How would you help somebody who's like, I want to stand for the Lord, I want to love God, but I do want to be open. What would that look like in from your perspective?
Yeah, that's a great question because there is this sense of openness somehow means compromise, right?
Right.
I mean, one of the big conversations I have to have with students is the difference between cultural relativism and moral relativism.
Right.
And it's easy to conflate those two, and some anthropologists do quite explicitly, but actually most don't. Even most secular anthropologists don't conflate those two, because it's kind of crazy to live as a moral relativist, and most people don't, right? Mm-hmm. They really do have things that they think are right or wrong. And of course the list is different depending on what you're appealing to, but you know, the Nazis were wrong. Genocide is wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, sexual assault is wrong. Like, it's mm-hmm. not controversial to say these things in right. any circles, including anthropological circles. So we do hold to these moral things, but I also want my students to get a sense that if they're going to understand someone, they need to do it in terms of the world in which that person lives, in terms of the context in which that person lives. So understanding has to mean that you look at whatever you're seeing from somebody and you understand it relative to the other things that exist in that person's view of the world, the other things that exist in their context. Doesn't mean you accept those things. It doesn't mean you think they're good. It doesn't mean you hold them up as morally equivalent to everything else in the world. But it just means that you have to understand it, and you have to understand it deeply. And of course, you know, Christ comes against every culture. You know, Christ is calling us in transformative ways, whatever context we're in, to follow him, which means to give things up and to change things and to be willing to you know, claim things that he calls us to that are different from what our society is calling us to. But what we often miss, of course, is that that's happening in our own culture, right? You know, whatever culture we're in. And we often think that, oh, those things that are different over there are the things that need to change. But, you know, we're a Christian place. And so these things make sense and they work. But I think that when we get to really deeply understand other people, even if their context is not very much influenced by scripture, not very much influenced by Christian tradition, we will learn things. We will have insights into ourselves that will allow us to be more critical observers of our culture, to see what it is that Christ is calling us to. Mm-hmm. And not just in that kind of like, oh, culture over there, but rather in the like, whoa, what's happening right here in front of me that God is calling me to transform or to rethink or to leave behind? Those are the things that are easy to miss. And understanding, you know, deep understanding of other people can really give us insight. But it doesn't mean you have to accept all those things. I mean, absolutely right. not in the way that we
And it's, you know, it's what I love about what you're saying is, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you there. But what I love about what you're saying is like, and I experience this so much, is that learning about other people reveals so much about myself, and then I learn about me, and it's not just about my national identity or whatever, but it's even just like, oh, I was holding to this idea, and I'm seeing that nobody here where I am does, and you know what? They're better off, and I see the value in that, and so it is kind of coming from a non-judgmental, and yet almost like I'm willing to be critical even of myself. So I think that's something that maybe people miss, that the idea of being open doesn't mean just open to other cultures. It's the idea of I'm open to, I could be wrong. My culture might not be okay. And I think that gets missed, as if we're acultural, and I'm now opening myself to other cultures that are going to ruin me, rather than, hold on a second, maybe there's already things inside, you know, and the Bible's clear that there's none righteous. So I can't be in the perfect cultural context. There's things in me that need to change.
And I would hope that openness would speak not just to openness to other ideas, but openness to the Holy Spirit.
Exactly.
The Holy Spirit is at work in every context, and the Holy Spirit is constantly speaking to us, but we often refuse to listen. And I think this is another way that we can open ourselves up to, like, what is God telling me? How is he calling me to greater faithfulness?
People are really struggling. There's the divide of struggle that exists right now, you say to somebody, oh my goodness, you know, here in America, there's been systemic racism. That becomes for some people, that's you're pushing them, you're totally alienating people. And it's an interesting thing that these things have all been coming up now. You know, I mean, it's been around America for a long, 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 since its inception. And I know within the anthropological world, it's been studied and documented and discussed. These terms are not new. It seems like, you know, there's more Christians now realizing, oh my goodness, we've been on the sidelines and we want to be engaged now, but it's brought rise to a whole nother, you know, this is ungodly, this is unbiblical, this is unchristian. And how do you navigate that? Because again, you've been on the side of studying these things, being open to understanding, though not from a moral relativistic perspective, but from a cultural relativistic perspective. How are you handling these things today? You know, you're now woke and progressive and liberal, right? Based on 2020, yeah, so they say, where these have been terms and ideas that have been discussed for decades and decades and decades.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I have to do is kind of put on my anthropological hat and really make sure that I understand the people to whom I'm speaking, right? Mm. That I listen carefully to what are their concerns. I had this very experience in a class that I taught last semester where we were talking about race and we were talking about you know, various, just ways that race has been understood in the cultural context of the United States, which is not the same way that it's been understood everywhere, right?
That's so, right.
And I was talking along and I was teaching and I didn't think too much to use terms like, or to address critical race theory, because it's not a term that a lot of scholars use.
Right.
It's
right.
Not a lot of scholars sort of identify, I am a critical race theorist. But they may draw on language that has mm-hmm. been sort of identified as part of that or something. So certainly we talked about some of the concepts that I think people identify with critical race theory, but then the students wrote their papers and I got a number of papers of students wrestling with exactly this, critical race theory. And I thought, well, of course, that makes sense, right? Because this is very much in the air right now. People are talking about it a lot. There's been this big statement that, you know, given by some presidents of Southern Baptist seminaries. So this semester, I'm being much more intentional about, okay, I know that critical race theory is something that you've heard about, that people have questions about. So we're going to talk about this, not because I think this is really central, but because I know this is important. And I've invited my students to say, tell me the things that you're hearing in your circles that you think are really important questions for us to address. So I'm trying to kind of open up my syllabus a little bit and let them tell me, what are the things in your context that need to be addressed? And this is, I think, an anthropological approach where I say, I want to understand this context. And it doesn't do any good for me just to sort of bring a message or bring teaching
right.
that I think is great, but that doesn't resonate with the things that you're thinking about and you care about and that are important for the context that you're in. And of course, you know, 20-year-olds are a foreign land for me these days. So I'm constantly kind of looking like, what's yeah. going on among the, yeah. the natives here?
Like, how are they understanding these things? It's
how
so
are they
different.
Understanding
yeah.
this? What are they hearing? What are their,
yeah.
and of course these students, you know, a lot of they're home a lot more, right? So their right. family environments have become even more important and, mm-hmm. and their family environments are all over the world, literally, but certainly all over the country. So I'm talking to people from the South. I'm talking to people from the Northeast. I'm talking to people from the West Coast. And there's different conversations going on in those different places. And so my task is to analyze that a little bit and figure out, okay, what are the important questions that we can talk about that are part of your context?
And so in that, you know, and I think that's such good advice just in general for everybody right now is the idea of like openness is not like, I'll just accept whatever I'm told. It's, I want to understand the context in which you're understanding the world around you. So it's not just that I have an idea and you have an idea, but I also want to understand how you've come to the idea that you've come to and why and based on what. And so it's like, it's about thoughtfulness. It's about respect. It's about honoring. And, you know, all these things that the Bible speaks to us about so clearly. And I just think about like, you know, I'm always on this idea of like, there is, you know, we live in the world of either I'm more right or more wrong because we're all wrong, you know, from God's perspective. It's not like he's come down and found the, you know, he didn't find Israel the closest to his liking, you know. He made them from nothing. And even they were the weakest and the least. And he chose to glorify himself through a broken, you know, one, a non-existent culture, and then two, a broken culture. And, you know, so I'm not the more right, you know, or on the same side, more wrong. So openness looks different today in our, and you're having to do it on generational levels as well. Hey, Brian, I'm going to stop us right now, and we're going to pick it up in the next episode because we got so much good stuff that you're talking about, and I'm just so enjoying this conversation. So those of you that have been listening or watching with us on this episode, thank you so much for being here. If you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, please do it. You just go in there and hit subscribe. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, the podcast, whatever streaming you're using, please subscribe. And we're looking forward to continuing this conversation with Dr. Brian Howell in the next episode.
Thank you for listening to Crossing Cultures. If you found value in the show, do us a favor and leave a review on iTunes or simply share the episode with a friend. And make sure to hit subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. If you'd like to connect with us, you can follow us on Instagram at crossing.cultures or by emailing us at thecrossingculturespodcast@gmail.com.